So the Warriors will go back on the power play. It will be 13 seconds of 4-on-3. Then it will be a minute 10 of 4-on-4. Then it will be 47 seconds of 5-on-4 for West. That's too much adding to my head right now. But right now, 4-on-3 for 13 seconds. Puck is battle for. Picked up by Chase Crass. Moves it near side. Here's a shot. Attempted by Shea Jones. Blocked and picked up by Nina. Puck is clear to center, but now a turnover. Warriors may have the numbers. Into the zone. Oh, and nobody following up on the left-hand side. The pass came from Rasmus, but there was nobody there. Puck now in deep behind the Nina cage. Puck is fed in front. Again, nobody there for the Warriors. And the puck cleared out of trouble by Nina. 4-on-4 hockey right now for 54 seconds. Puck is played by West. Back up the center. Moved on the left-hand side. Puck is played by the Rockets and Calvin Zindup. He'll flip it ahead. Good pass into the zone. With it is Sutton. Sutton in front. Sutton a shot and a stop made by Julian Scalcucci. Good play by Scalcucci against a dangerous goal scorer. Warriors cleared back to center. Puck is now played. Back to neutral ice. Battle for the puck. Grabbing it is Hendricks Damrell. Damrell by himself. 1-on-2, 3. Takes a shot. Deflected to the near corner. Now coming in to help. Kate Damrell, but turn back to Nina. 10 more seconds of 4-on-4, then the Warriors have a short power play. Nina back up the center. Puck knocked away by Hendricks Damrell, but picked up by Sutton. He'll dump it in on goal, and now the power play begins, but covering up the puck is Julian Scalcucci. So it'll be a defensive zone faceoff for the Warriors with 36 seconds of power play time remaining. 9:05 to go in the third period, and a 4-2 lead for Nina. Face off to the right of Julian Scalcucci. Caden Boleyn taking the draw. Puck is fought for in the deep corner. Now comes loose, played by Joe Gravin. Gravin will pass it ahead. Here comes Wausau West up to center. Kate Damrell. Damrell will roll it over the blue line, but taken back and cleared by Calvin Zinda. Behind the net, Scalcucci swings it to the near side boards. Boleyn. Boleyn up to Kate Damrell. Pass a little bit too far in front of Rasmus on the right wing. It does roll in deep. Puck whipped along the boards, kept in. Gravin in front. Hendricks Damrell. Damrell could not get the shot off as the penalty comes to an end. Puck cleared out of the zone by Nina. Off the right-hand side. Lidke. Lidke fires. Oh, and a one-timer from the left faceoff circle. Whiffed on by Zach Verhagen. Now the Warriors get it back. Puck is flipped over the glass into the netting by Rasmus. Out of play. Just past the midway point of the third period. 4-2 lead for the Nina Rockets. Nina Hortonville Menasha. Face off back in the Wausau West zone. Left of Scalcucci. Draw battle for near the dot. Still battle for. Now grabbed by Lidke. Lidke still fighting for it near the right corner. Scrum for the puck in the corner. A couple of white jerseys, couple of blue jerseys. Still battle for that puck. Must still be loose. No whistle at this point. And now puck does come loose below the goal line right-hand side. Still a battle along the boards. Warriors got to get control of that puck. Puck is still battle for. Cooper to point back on the ice after that 10-minute misconduct, fighting for it. Puck in behind the cage. Puck below the goal line, right-hand side. Now picked up by Nina. Back to the right point. With it is Cooper Zinda. Moves it left. Shot. Rebound. It cleared aside. Puck was loose in the slot. Dangerous spot. Now the Warriors the other way. Into the zone. Cooper to point. Trying to feed it in front for Chase Brass. Puck is loose. Just left of the goal, but now whipped along the boards by Nina. Back to center ice. Played by Shea Jones. Now the Warriors. Owen Pergalski. Gives it back over. Now into the zone. Good move. Shot by Kras and a right pad save. Kras got himself between the circles. Good stop made by Debert. Puck back to center. Puck is dumped in. Covered up by Debert. Well, the Warriors, now they have that top line back together. Let's see if they can get some more pressure. This group has been putting on a lot of heat when they've been together in this game. 6:58 to go. 4-2, Nino Hortonville-Menasha. Face off to the left of Debert. Puck is played for along the far side boards. And now cleared. One-on-one the other way. With it to Simonsen. Simonsen into the zone. Simonsen got knocked off the puck. Screaming for a penalty is Nino, but they're not going to get it. That was a clean play. And now a whistle. Looks like a hand pass, and the puck will be played back out of the zone. Heartbreaker tonight for the Wausau West boys. They fall in overtime to the East on a game-winning shot by Jaden Garrett. Warriors said come from behind, taking the lead late in regulation, but East came back again. So a tough one tonight for Wausau West over at the Fieldhouse. In behind the cage, Julian Scalcucci moves it over to Joel Gravine. Now the Warriors looking to break it up ice. Now through center, here comes Wausau West into the zone. Tyler Wendell. Wendell knocked away. Puck is still loose, but then knocked away. And the other way, 2-on-2, comes Mark Sutton. Moves it left-hand side, but a whistle and an offside coming up on Nina. But after the offside, taking a hard shot up against the boards is Joe Gravine. And Gravine is a little slow getting up. He's on his hands and knees right now, and he looks like he's holding one of his arms. And boy, oh boy, that's the last thing that you want to see in the final regular season game. You just want to get through this one healthy to get to the playoffs, and Joe Gravine is off and shaken up. There was an offside, and then the puck was brought in on the left-hand side. There was a collision with Gravine and one of the Nino players, and Joe took the worst of it up against the boards. Now the Warriors try to bring it up ice. Puck is battled for at neutral. Still bouncing around. Now taken away by Nino. Up the right-hand side, Verhagen. Verhagen a shot and a glove hand save from Wausau West goaltender Julian Scalcucci. .603 to go. 2-goal deficit. Warriors need to get one hopefully in the next 4 minutes. Get to the point where you're down by one. Final 2 minutes. Try to get that goaltender off of the extra attacker. Puck is battle for near the right faceoff circle. Grab by Nina. Turning, firing. Knocked down by Scalcucci. There's Krieger. Centering pass. Deflects through the crease off the near side boards. And now chipped up to center by the Warriors. Puck is grabbed by Krieger. Dumped in deep for Nina. Warriors have to reset. Puck moved near side. Kate Tamrell gets it out. Now Hendricks Tamrell through center. Hendricks into the zone, but a whistle and an offside on the Warriors. Face off back outside the zone. 5:34 to go. 37 shots on net for Nina. 26 shots on net for the Warriors. 4-2 lead for Nina. Cooper to point will take the draw. We're going to have to do it again. Cooper will be tossed, and Chase Kras will now step in. Face off one cleanly by Kras, and the puck dumped in by the Warriors. Puck rolls around to the right-hand side. Cooper to point, chips it in behind the cage. Puck is still battle for it, moved along the near side boards. Owen Pergalski fighting for it for the Warriors. Pergalski has it. Now below the goal line. Who's it to DePoit? DePoit has it knocked away. Picked up by Simonsen. Simonsen gets it back up to center. Now back up ice. Here come the Rockets. Puck will roll in softly. Sticked aside by Julian Scalcucci. Whipped along to the far side boards. Puck is paddled for. Now another whistle and a hand pass coming up on Nina. And the faceoff will come back into the Nina zone. 5:02 on the clock. Final score of that West-East boys basketball game tonight. Lumberjacks 75, Warriors 72 in OT. Warriors back in action Tuesday night at home at the Fieldhouse against Marshfield. 7 o'clock pregame right here on 98.9 WXCO. Face off, chip behind the cage. Puck moved to the near side boards. Grabbing it to point, turned, fired, and the puck is deflected wide of the net. Now knocked and went down. Good job by DePoit, keeping it in deep. Puck moved to the far side corner. Puck is now cleared all the way down. That should be an icing on the Rockets, and it will be. So another offensive zone draw for the Warriors as they try to put some heat on. 4:42 to go. And again, no matter what happens here tonight, I think we've seen some things that you can carry into the postseason against a good hockey team. Warriors came out so very quickly. Puck is cleared all the way down ice. Another icing again on Nina Hortonville-Menasha. 4:31 to go. Puck is battled for near the dot. Picked up now by Sutton. Sutton brings it through center. Sutton into the zone, right-hand side. Sutton comes in front. Sutton a shot. Save is made. Rebound. Another save made by Scalcucci. Good job by Julian Scalcucci. He has played well again here tonight. Puck back to center. Nina setting up at their own blue line. With it is Clayton Labs. Puck is battled for. Now the puck in front of the Wausau West bench. Shipped over the boards into the Warrior bench. Out of play. 4:07 to go. Lots of stoppages. Have not seen a lot of flow here late in the third period. Face-off will be deep in the Wausau West zone, right of Julian Scalcucci. Caden Boline in the circle for the Warriors. Wins the draw. Puck is played by the Warriors. Moved ahead. Up to center ice. With it is Cade Damrell. Damrell has it poked away, but does chip it in deep. Puck rolls into the left corner. Boy, big run that time by the defenseman Setch against Cade Damrell. Cade was able to avoid the big shot, but the puck cleared back to center. Puck bouncing around at neutral. Picked up by Caden Boline. Boline then had it knocked away. Puck back to center. Taken there by Shea Jones. Puck off the near side boards. Puck moved back by Nina over the Wausau West blue line. 3.5 minutes to go. 4-2 Nina. Puck is knocked away by Cade Damrell back into the Nina zone. Now the puck goes in behind the cage. And now a penalty coming up on Nina. Extra attacker. There's a shot by Shea Jones, deflected, and then touched up by Nina. Well, an opportunity now for West with the power play to try to move back to within one. Max and Selch. Hooking is the call. That was good hard work by Cade Damrell for the Warriors. Face off to the right of goalie Owen Devers. Warriors win the draw. Chase Kras, who's at near side to Pergalski, back to the point. Jones. Shea Jones left point. Moves it to Cooper to point. The point moves it right face off circle. Shot! Stop is made. Good hard shot. Riser that time by Kras. Feed in front, deflected back below the goal line. And now the puck is grabbed by Labs. Labs trying to find an opening, does so, and clears it. Good opportunity there. Chase Kras with a good shot. Good stop made by Debert. 1:30 on the power play, 2:45 to go in the game. Warriors trying to bring it up ice quickly. Through the left-hand side of the zone is Cooper to point, and another penalty as Cooper gets knocked down, hooked. And the Warriors will have a 5-on-3 advantage. Theoretically, right now, if the Warriors can score on the 5-on-3, which has 1:21 on the clock, and then are able to score on a... Oh! They did not call a penalty. They called an offside. Ah, my mistake. I thought the arm went up for a penalty. My mistake. It was an offside, and now West will use their timeout. Timeout, Warriors. 2:37 to go in the third period. 4-2 is the lead for Neenah Hortonville Menasha. We'll keep it right here. Let you know that our next Wausau West hockey broadcast. Start of the playoffs next Thursday night, Marathon Park Ice Arena. They'll take on the winner of Tuesday's game between number 7-seeded Superior and number 10-seeded Thomas Varda. Thursday night, 6:50 for the pregame, 7 o'clock for the opening faceoff. Saturday night, we have Central Wisconsin Storm Hockey. Storm taking on number 1-ranked Bay Area Ice Bears. I'll be at Cornerstone, 7:20 for the pregame, 7:30 for the opening faceoff. So that's coming up. Hockey action before on Saturday. Well, see what the Warriors do here with 2:37 to go. Do you pull the goalie yet? Try to add an extra attacker? No, not at this point. I think the plan is try to get a power play goal. Then, at 4-3, pull that goalie. Again, oh, that was close to another penalty, but they called offside on Cooper DePoit into the zone. Faceoff won by West. Does Cooper DePoit still at neutral? Gets it over to Tyler Wendell, cannot handle the pass, but just dumps it in deep. Behind the cage, Calvin Zinda drops it off to Cooper Zinda. He'll clear it all the way to the empty. The Warriors did clear the empty the net. It's a 6-on-4 now. They brought the goalie off after the win on the faceoff. Up ice. Cooper DePoit trying to turn the corner. DePoit behind the cage. Bad in front. Deflected back behind the goal line. Puck is battled for in the right corner. Move back to the near side. Getting there first is Owen Pergalski fighting for the puck in the corner. Scrum for that puck. Getting it loose is Hendrick Stamrow. Back to Shea Jones. Whiffed on the shot. And here comes an empty net goal. Wide open and then right to the net and poked in by Mark Stutzen. Empty net goal. And then after the goal, the net was knocked off by West, and I think there might be a penalty coming up. 15-14 of the period.
Rocket goal scored by number 20.
Waiting to see if there is a penalty or not. Guess not. I guess they'll let them get away with that little frustration move. So Mark Sutton with the empty netter makes it 5-2. Oh, there is a penalty.
19, 10-minute misconduct. Penalty to be served by number 11.
Cooper DePoit called for another 10-minute misconduct. It will not affect the manpower on the ice. Behind the cage, now moved near side, centering pass. That was attempted by Tanner Zidzik. Also out there is Alex Fail. Now on the left-hand side, Finn Richard. There's a shot attempt by Parker Barrero. Deflected out of play. The Neenah penalty has come to an end. 5-on-5 hockey with 1:16 to go. 5-2, Neenah with the lead. Battle for the puck below the goal line. Deflected away from Alex Fail to the far side. Neenah behind the cage. With it is Drew Drock. Drock getting double teamed. Finds a little room on the left-hand side. Puck knocked away back to Drock. Still stick handles. His pass is off the mark as we hit 1 minute to go in the game. Puck is dumped up to center. Played by Finn Richard for the Warriors. Gets it over to Rasmus. Rasmus will cross the red line and dump it in deep. Puck is played behind the cage by Owen Debert. Puck is moved to the far side boards. Taken there by Keegan Krieger. He'll get it through center ice. Now into the zone comes Neenah. Pass knocked away, stolen by Finn Richard. Pass ahead. Back up ice, Parker Barrero. Barrero trying to turn the corner. Stops near faceoff circle. Turns, fires it on net. Deflected, rolls in, and then jumping on it will be Owen Debert. Stick around, our post game coming up. We'll recap the scoring, get a chance to talk to the coach, and then close the book on the regular season. Everything up to this point was a prelude to what happens over the next 2 weeks. Face off, controlled by Nina. Back up ice comes Simonson. Simonson fighting for the puck along the near side boards. Puck comes loose but does deflect into the Wausau West zone. Finn Richard behind his own cage with 15 seconds to go. Richard will pass it ahead, goes off a skate, deflected in on net, and then whipped off the far side boards by Julian Scalcucci. Down to 5 seconds to go. Fight for the puck along the boards. Final seconds will tick off, and the regular season comes to an end. Five to two, Nina Hortonville Menasha over Wausau West. We'll come back with our postgame coming up next. This is Wausau West Warrior Hockey on 98.9 WXCO.
What's your idea of winter fun? It's hitting the trails after a fresh snowfall and you're thinking new snowmobile. It's time to call CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing fun. If you're thinking new four-wheel drive vehicle to get you to the downhill slopes or the cross-country trails, it's time to call CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing fun. Quick, easy loan applications, friendly lenders, and great rates make CCU the lending leader in financing fun. If your idea of winter fun isn't in the snow, maybe hitting the highway in a new motorhome is the way to go. Just give CCU a call. Financing for motorhomes and winter getaways. When you think fun, think Clover Belt Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Life's too short and winter's too long. Call CCU for your great rate financing. Dial 715-842-5693 or apply online or from your smartphone. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. Local lenders lending local money. Keeping our community strong.
For more than 60 years, Sun Printing has been Central Wisconsin's commercial printer of choice due to their commitment to quality, creative solutions, and dedicated service. Sun Printing's team offers you a wide spectrum of services, whether you need vehicle graphics, offset, digital, large format, graphic design, or mailing. They print everything under the sun. No project is too big or too small, so give Sun Printing a call at 845-4911 or visit them online at sunprinting.com.
Hungry for flavor-packed fun?
Dive into Red Robin's sizzling burgers, mouth-watering fries, and endless options.
Or maybe you're craving the perfect slice.
Then it's Donato's Pizza, your passport to pizza perfection.
Order now and treat yourself to an unforgettable taste experience.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza, 2255 48 Rib Mountain Drive in Wausau.
Call 715-301-0019 or log on redrobin.com.
Red Robin and Donato's Pizza.
Yum.
To the Wausau West Athletic Department for their continued support of our broadcast of Wausau West Warrior Athletics on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Thanks for listening to our broadcast on the radio, but we want to see you out and about cheering on Wausau West student athletes in action. To find out your next opportunity to see the Warriors, go to wisconsinvalleyconference.org and click on Wausau West.
Looking for the best in website design and digital marketing? Look no further than Coast to Coast Marketing, Central Wisconsin's number one choice. We're not just about building great websites, we're about building our community too. That's why for every website you purchase, we'll donate 10% of the sale to the school of your choice. Imagine growing your business while giving back to local schools. It's a win-win. Visit c2cmarketing.com or call 715-379-7460 today and make a difference with your business and your community.
The Wausau West Hockey Booster Club is a proud supporter of our broadcast of Warrior Hockey on 98.9 WXCO. The Wausau West Hockey Booster Club would also like to thank their program sponsors for helping support the Wausau West Hockey Program and the Wausau West Hockey Invitational. Those sponsors include Gold Line Golf and Hockey and Troy's TikTok. Please pay a visit to those businesses and thank them for their support of Wausau West Warrior Hockey. Champion Center in the Fox Cities. Wausau West finishes the regular season 18 wins and 6 losses as they fall tonight to Nina Hortonville Menasha by a score of 5-2. We'll talk to head coach B.J. Brandt in a few moments, but let's look at the scoring of this one. Warriors got on the board first. Warriors played just a stellar first period. I mean, they came out here, lots of fire in the skates. Could have had much better than a 1-0 lead after about 8 minutes, but in the end, at 5:53 of the period, Owen Pregalski scored. Assist on the play went to Hendricks Damrow and Cooper DePoit, and West had a 1-0 lead. But then Nina got their first power play opportunity and took advantage at 11:41 of the first. Scoring the goal for the Rockets was Ty Labs. Assist on the play went to Carter Simonson and also to Mark Sutton, who was 1-1. Then Nina Hortonville Menasha took the lead at 14:28 of the first period. It was Clayton Labs scoring. Assist went to Carter Simonson and Ty Labs, and it was 2-1 at the end of one period of play. Then in the second period, the Warriors got even late in the period on the power play. Warriors killed off 3 Rocket power plays in that period, and then when they had an opportunity at 14:40, they would score. A deflection in front from Kate Damrell. Assist went to Hendricks Damrell and Tegan Rasmus, and we were even at 2-2. The big goal of the game, though, came in the final seconds of the second period. 16:24, with 36 seconds to go in the period. A rush up ice, an odd man rush for Nina, and ultimately the puck came off the stick of Carter Simonson. It ended up near the right goalpost, and there to poke it home was Preston Lidke. Simonson with an assist, also an assist on that play for Calvin Zinda. That gave Nina the lead 3-2 at the end of two periods of play. Then in the third, again on the power play, 3:51, an unassisted goal for the Rockets. Calvin Zinda made it 4-2, and then the Warriors pulled the goalie late, and at 15:14, an empty net goal scored by Mark Sutton, 5-2, and that is the final score. 38 shots on net tonight for the Nina Rockets, so that means 33 saves for Julian Scalcucci, 27 shots on net for the Warriors, 25 saves made by goaltender Owen Debert for Nina. Nina finishes their regular season with 19 wins, 4 losses, and a tie. The Warriors will head to the playoffs with 18 wins and 6 losses. And again, Wausau West started the year off 3-3. Since that point, they finished up in their final 18 games by winning 15 of those 18. But tonight, they come up short by a score of 5-2 to the Rockets. Head coach B.J. Brandt joining us. Let's start at the beginning. I thought the first 8-9 minutes of this game, probably as well as your team has played all season. You came out really, really fast. And I think we're pretty unfortunate only being up 1-0.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like our first half of the first period was really good. And then even I just felt a little snake bit after the first to be down 2-1 because I felt like we played better to be at least even.
That's what I said, yeah.
And then the second we managed some immaturity. We managed exactly what you and I talked about we couldn't do.
Killed off 3 power plays.
Well, what happened in the first period, when they scored on the power play, we were really aggressive. And we just talked, our adjustment was we couldn't be as aggressive. We had to hold the middle ice. We had to make sure we weren't playing into their hand. And we killed off, I mean, that's a good power play.
Yes, it is.
So when you looked at, like, again, we made one mistake at the end of the second period. And you're down a goal going into the third. And
Let me ask you real quick. That goal, I mean, just from up here, I mean, you got back to even. That was a grind in the second period. To get to back to even, did you feel anything? Did it take a little something out?
I felt like we had great momentum going into it. Like when we got that power play goal, it was ugly, but it was a power play goal. And then we just, there was a minute left in the period. We had to make the right plays. And I don't know that we made the right plays. And we changed and we made it. It didn't fall into place for us. And we're down, you know, 1 going into the third. And then, you know, we gave up 1 and an empty netter in a third. And I just felt like after the first 9 minutes, we got in our own way. And I felt like my message to the guys was I watched this game before. I watched this game about a year ago from today. The exact same things happened a year ago from today. And that ended our season a year ago. And we've got to learn from it, because if this happens on next Thursday or this happens at any point in the future, our season's over. And I also told him, I said, you're 18-6 in the regular season. You know, 15 of the last, I think we won 15 of the last 18 games, some crazy number like that. And I just told him, I said, you have to be proud of that, because with the bad, there was some good and a lot of good and a lot of perseverance. And I told him, I said, that's what we have to draw on. That's the work we have to do, and those are the things we have to think about going forward.
You look like a great hockey team until the first penalty. I mean, it's like one of those things where it just sort of snowballed after that. And again, I don't know.
It's immaturity, Chad. We have some guys that just absolutely can't get out of their own way in terms of maturity. And that's where you have to find ways to reset. You have to find ways to not get emotionally involved in the things that don't matter. And then when we do, it does snowball. And that's where, you know, you hope, all right, guys, we got to learn from it. We have to learn from it. There's no other choice, because the other choice is season's over.
May think it feels good at the moment, but when the puck's in the back of the net, it does not feel good. I mean, there's that moment of, for lack of a better term, insanity, where you just, I want to do it, but you got to not do it. I mean, it's easier said than done.
Oh, it's way easier said. It is an emotional game, and we got guys that play the game with the emotion, and there's reason. That's why they're successful in the game, but it's also why things can go south. And you know, when you look at the whole entirety of the game, we were just okay. We were really good early. Yeah. We had a great F1. We had a great forecheck. We had really good scoring. Their goalie came up big a couple of times. That if it bounces our way, all of a sudden it's a 2-0 game. And that changes the mindset. Yeah. That changes how things are done. And you know, we're going to learn from it. We're going to collect. We're going to make sure we've got, you know, four practices. And then we get to play somebody on Thursday.
Just keep showing the first 9-10 minutes. I think it was so good. It really was. I mean, if you play at that level, you made the number 3 ranked team in the state look pretty average for 10 minutes. And then that first penalty really just changed the whole tempo of this hockey game. But, okay, 24 games down. I remember years ago, you know, talking when Pete was coaching. You play for 3 months, and then it comes down to 9 days, basically, the whole sectional.
Yep.
You start on Thursday, the sectional final the following Saturday. 3 games. It comes down 3 games after 3 months. It really is a new season, isn't it?
I told the guys, I said, it's we season now. Like, there's no individual plays anymore. It's all about the team, because the only thing that matters is that our team has won more than the other team. And we'll take that as many times as we can get here to continue going. And those are the things we have to do. Like, that's all that's to it. You know, we're gonna recollect. We're gonna watch film. We're gonna look at the good. We're gonna look at the bad. And hopefully that you know, having a few days off, watching some games, watching some hockey will get us ready to go in the right mindset on Thursday.
I will remind you, don't leave without me.
We won't, Chad. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach. Coach B.J. Brandt of the Wausau West Warriors, 5-2. Again, at the Fieldhouse, heartbreak for the Warrior Boys, 75-72 in overtime to East. We'll have the Warrior Boys on Tuesday against Marshfield. We'll have the Warrior Hockey Team on Thursday of next week against Superior or Toma Sparta. And then we'll have the Storm against Bay Area Saturday. So lots of great Wausau West sports coming up here on 98.9 WXCO. Thanks again to all of our sponsors, without whose help we could not bring you Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey. And thanks to you for joining us. I'm Chad Holmes. Final score, Nina Hortonville Menasha 5, Wausau West 2. This has been Wausau West Warrior Hockey on 98.9 WXCO.
This has been Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau West Hockey has been brought to you by the Cloverbelt Credit Union, Red Robin Restaurants, Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, the Wausau West Hockey Booster Club, and Coast to Coast Marketing. Thanks for joining us for Wausau West Warrior High School Hockey on your home for the Warriors, 98.9 WXCO.
Whether they're applying for a mortgage, choosing among credit cards, or using any number of other consumer financial products, the CFPB was going to oversee that, or did oversee that, anytime there was excessive illegal or hidden fees on credit cards, predatory lending, all kinds of other things. And it enabled people to, when they thought they were scammed, to file a complaint with the CFPB and monitor, and the CFPB would investigate that. You know, we have quite a number, over 20 laws in our country that protect consumers. And before the CFPB, those were scattered among a bunch of different agencies and regulators, and nobody was really enforcing them or overseeing them and protecting consumers. And the CFPB was created to be the one agency whose sole mission is to protect American consumers.
And now there's talk of they're just not going to fund it anymore, as I understand. Russell Voigt, the director of the Office of Budget and Management, evidently acting director of the CFPB. Am I getting this right?
That's right. And he there's now been a permanent one nominated by Trump, but they will have to be approved and everything. But yes, Russell Voigt came in and basically stopped everything, basically told employees not to come in this week. He basically said, stop everything that you're doing. You know, stop public communications to warn consumers about scams or let them know, you know, how they can get help from the CFPB. They have to stop that. Stop enforcing consumer protection laws, suspending all the consumer protection rules that the CFPB has put forth. And basically, all of this is going to shut it down. They even ask the Fed, which collects fees from financial institutions to fund the CFPB and other places, basically told them not to send any more money to the CFPB. So they're defunding it and just closing it down. It's basically closed for business right now.
Yeah, they put him in charge of it specifically to shut it down. And look, this is what Trump and his minions have said they're going to do. I mean, I look at Linda McMahon at the Department of Education. Trump has said, I hope she puts herself out of a job. They want to destroy every arm of government. And one like this that's very helpful to consumers, right, to people. And this is where, you know, I got a question. Is this legal? I mean, wasn't this something that Congress enacted? Wasn't this something that has some rule behind it?
Yes, I mean there are laws behind it, and it is illegal most likely. There are lawsuits being brought, but as you know, right now that's really the main way to push back on these actions that are being taken. And not all courts now, many of them have very conservative judges now as a result of the first Trump administration. And so we'll see what happens. I think the courts in some cases are making the right decisions, but we'll see what happens. But you know, for now, Americans don't have this consumer protection.
No, while the wheels of justice are grinding slowly, people are getting screwed over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And meanwhile, of course, their personal data is in the hands of Elon Musk and his staff.
Man, you know, I go back to something, Mike, and I've said this a bunch of times. I'm sure my listeners are bored of it already. But my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because he understands return on investment. I look at someone like Musk, and that quote from, I remember him saying it 40 years ago, is never more true than it is when I look at Elon Musk.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what is he going to do, for example, with this financial information? How's he going to benefit from it? Well, you know, he might sell it. Could he sell it? Who would he sell it to? Would he use it for his own business purposes? You know, he bought his way into the federal government. He was the biggest campaign donor for President Trump. And now he's doing things that will enable him to profit personally. And that's a really, really serious concern. I think most Americans would be very concerned about that.
I mean, I think most Americans know that there are people who have bought their way into government, but those are generally ceremonial roles. We'll give you an ambassadorship to, you know, who knows where, and, you know, hey, thanks for your donation. That's how things have been done. This is the first time, at least that I can find, where, you know, an unelected, unaccountable, well, the richest man in the world has access to all of the levers of our government with no accountability, no oversight, and no one to question what he's doing.
I think that's right. I mean, there are some efforts, as I said, underway, but meanwhile, they're moving so fast. You know, as
it's
you say,
over.
The levers of justice. Yeah.
It's over. They've got the information. They, Musk and his little ferrets, they've already downloaded virtually every bit of information that I think they would probably want from our government, because the doors were wide open, as I understand. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, they went into went into these different agencies, and they basically just took over and sent people, as you said, sent people home and leave the keys. We'll go from here.
Yeah, basically, that is what happened. In some cases, they were pushed back a little bit or delayed. For example, when they tried to get into the Treasury payment system, but then they got in. And so, as you say, that's done. Yes, they're having access to a lot of things, and they're having a big, big say in how those agencies are funded and what they're doing. And that's something that everybody should be really concerned about, because Elon Musk was not elected.
Yeah. And more importantly, not just Musk. I mean, all of these little Doge boys, all of these literally children now having access to all of this information, a couple of them with some sketchy backgrounds. What comes of all of this down the road? What comes of all of this when they get their hands on it, as 18, 19, 20-year-old brains, not thinking, consequence and all of that? What does that give us?
Yeah. I mean, do we trust them?
I don't.
What legal recourse do we have if they do something with the information? Will Musk pay for that? How can you undo that? Once information is out, you can't undo that.
I believe this is a failure of Congress. This is a failure of the Republican Congress to hold Musk and this in check. I literally cannot believe they've abdicated their responsibility to be a co-equal branch of government and to stop this from happening.
Yeah, they basically signed on to the Project 2025 playbook. And that's what a lot of this is carrying forth. In Project 2025, it said they wanted to abolish, in essence, the CFPB. And that's what's happening in this case. Yes, you're right. The Republicans in Congress have agreed to do all this, and they're not challenging it in most cases.
No, because look, Musk, whatever happens, Musk will walk away. He's the richest man in the world. He can go anywhere. It's Congress who's going to eat this. I can't believe that they would be the, because they're going to be the fall guys. Why didn't you oversee this? Why didn't you hold hearings? Why didn't you hold them accountable? Why didn't you do anything? And I'm hoping in a year, when the election season starts ramping up, those questions are first and foremost.
Yeah. And when people see what's starting to happen where they don't have protection, I think that they'll start asking questions. Why, like you say, why weren't you here? Why didn't you protect us? We had laws. Why didn't you allow them to be carried out?
So now that this is going away, what should workers and consumers, what should they be watching out for? I mean, now we've got to be our own policemen again. And look, we all are. And I'm not saying that people are stupid. I'm not saying that, people make all bad choices. But there are some really crafty characters out there. There are some really very interesting schemes to get into your pocket. Since there's no cop on the beat now and no place to go to get justice, in my view, what should people be looking out for?
Well, they should be careful about their data and what transactions they do. But look, it's hard because financial transactions, usually one person, the financial institution, has all the information. A lot of this stuff is electronic, digitized now, and it's very hard for the consumer to know when they're being scammed. So it's a very difficult situation. And I think that they should definitely communicate with their, elected representatives and demand that they do something.
Yeah, is this something that you see Democrats fighting? Yeah, is this one of the hills you see them suppose, quote unquote, dying on to save this? Or are we going to let this go kind of like they've let USAID go?
No, I think the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is very, very important to these members, and they will protect it. As you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren has really been working hard to get people together and educate them about what this means for American consumers when they're getting a car loan, when they're getting a mortgage for their home or whatever. And I think this is one of the most important ones, because this is really at the core of what Americans expect from their government is, protection from big corporations, banks, big financial institutions. That's at the core of what Americans want their elected representatives to do for them.
Yeah,
to protect.
We seem to forget easily. I have people, they give me the right wing line of, job killing regulations. And I usually follow up with, you know, people killing lack of regulation. And I think it's easy to forget why something was enacted or why Congress thought it was important to move in a direction. Real quick, yeah. I mean, in the last line of questioning I've got for you, why was this put into place? You know, walk us through, if you can, the memory of why this is important and the lesson we should have learned. And I thought we learned, but we evidently are going to have to potentially learn again.
Yeah, back in the 2008 financial crisis, people may remember that there were many people who got mortgages who shouldn't have had mortgages, who were scammed into taking out sometimes multiple mortgages. And so when the mortgage industry, when people started not being able to make payments on those mortgages and so forth, the banks came in and foreclosed on those homes, and we had just massive consumer problems and impacts on consumers. And then the economy went into, we had the great the recession that happened after that, and people suffered. And so Congress said, look, we want to stop these kinds of scammy practices. We don't want financial institutions to be giving people products and services that aren't appropriate or that have bad terms. And so they established the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They said, you know, we have all these consumer laws, but they're not being enforced because they're scattered around. Let's put them all under one agency and have that agency specialize in helping consumers. And so that's what the CFPB does. And of course, that scared banks and other financial institutions, because now they would actually be they would be policed for their adherence to these rules. And ever since the beginning, they've been attacking the CFPB, the financial industry. And so here we are today, the CFPB survived up until now, and it should be very concerning to every American that, what Musk is doing, and also just the sort of MAGA Republicans, you know, what they want to do to deregulate the CFPB and get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was amazing how fast, from the end of Glass-Steagall until the collapse in 2008, how fast that happened. When you took the guardrails off, how fast the hucksters and the schemesters crashed this economy. And my fear is, by again taking away the guardrails, we're driving the car towards the cliff.
Yeah, and average Americans usually can't afford to have something like this happen to them. You know, Elon Musk can have, you know, some kind of, you know, failure of one of his companies or something like that, and he's still got billions of dollars. But average people can't afford to have these kinds of things happen to them.
So what should people do? Is there an act here? Is there a bit of outrage? Should we be calling people? Should we be, you know, marching in the streets? Any thoughts of, or is this just a done? I think it's a done deal, but I want your thought.
Well, it is a done deal for now, but they should definitely, you know, pressure their representatives in Congress to do something about it and to do their job.
Yeah, do their job. That's a good one. Alex, I appreciate the time. Thanks for the information. I look forward to talking to you again as well. The attacks continue. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for you having me.
Alex Thornton, Senior Director of Financial Regulation for an Inclusive Economy there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. I'll make sure you check that out. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you paying attention? Are you worried that you're going to get shafted? I know I am. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. What labor union would you say has the coolest name? The Sons of Vulcan would most certainly have to be in the running. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day the Sons of Vulcan ended their 8-month strike and won a union contract. The Vulcans were skilled steelworkers. Many were immigrants from England, Scotland, and Wales. They worked at puddling, the process by which carbon was burnt off of molten iron in order to form steel. It was tough work that required physical strength, skill, and experience. The Vulcans first formed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1858. A skilled trade union, only puddlers were eligible to join. They called their locals forges. They took their name, Vulcan, from the Roman god of fire and volcanoes. With the ongoing Civil War, the demand for steel grew. The work of the Vulcans was vital to the Union's war effort. But as the Civil War drew to a close, puddlers' wages were threatened. The Vulcans declared a national strike. The strike wore on for 8 months. Finally, the industry leaders agreed to the workers' demands. The Vulcans won wage increases tied to industry profits, as well as union recognition. With this victory, the Vulcans' membership grew. By 1873, the number of Vulcans had topped 3,000 members. Unfortunately, that year saw a major economic panic sweep across the United States. The economic crisis took a toll on union membership. Another downfall of the union was their policy not to admit black members. This meant that employers could hire black labor in an effort to undermine the union. By 1876, the Vulcans had merged with other steel unions to form the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, the reality is quite simple. Anytime they loosen financial regulations, anytime they go, no, we've learned our lesson, corporate America will be okay this time. They've learned. Anytime we've done that, workers and consumers have gotten screwed. Every time we go, no, they learned. You know, when they did away with Glass-Steagall, and I remember the arguments at the time, these antiquated rules, they're not good for today's economic world. We need to loosen the reins and let entrepreneurs and capitalists and venture capitalists and vultures, we need to let them all unleash the power of good. We're going to all be millionaires. We're going to all be great. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be daisies and sunshines and white floppy hats. It's going to be amazing. And what it turned into for some, yeah, a handful, sure. For the majority of people, a nightmare. I remember 2009, 2010, fighting to keep people in their homes because of what the mortgage industry had done. I knew people who had gotten 2 and 3 loans. I knew one very close person who I remember, you know, talking to at the time, who bought a house for, like, let's say it was $75,000. And they took out a loan for like $70,000 for the first part. And then to get away from the PMI, the private mortgage insurance, they took out a 15-year loan for like 20% more, and they paid a crazy interest rate. And then, once they got in the house, they got a consolidation kind of loan to pay some credit cards. So this house that was like 75 grand was mortgaged to about 125. And you go, how could they do that? Well, no rules. And they were just writing things as fast as they could. And it was explained to me like this. An old banker, you know, doing this show, reached out and said, this is what happened. And he said, during my career as a banker, going back into the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s, he said, look, you know, bankers would write a mortgage based on your ability to pay. You know, you had to have X amount of dollars in the bank. You had to have, you know, a reserve. You couldn't spend more than a certain percentage of your income on housing. You had to have 20% down. They were literally writing people with no money down kind of mortgages at the time. And he said, look, what the banking industry learned is that mortgages are front-end loaded. Most of the money that they get, you know, in the first 5 or 6 years. It's heavy interest at the beginning. So they get their money back sooner and they make their profit there. And then, you know, whatever happens down there, that's something else. What they figured out is the asset kept going up. The housing prices kept going up. So even if you failed, they would succeed because they could take the house back and they could sell it into foreclosure, get their money and then some. And it was this kind of gamble that the banking industry, in large part thanks to the Clinton era, Graham Leach Bliley economic reform that did away with Glass-Steagall and allowed, you know, gambling houses basically to write mortgages. And what they did is they created a giant bubble, and the bubble burst in 2008, which was predictable. They had been predicting it all through the Bush years, and Bush did nothing. Allowed it to happen. So when the collapse hit, and oh my God, we got to bail everybody out because we don't know what it looks like if we allow the big banks to fail. We did. And millions of people lost their homes. Millions of people lost their savings. And nobody really went to jail. And this, I think, is one of Obama's greatest failures. Understand, if something like that were to happen, I think under someone like Trump, we'd be perp walking people. Because that's what the American people wanted. We wanted justice. We wanted someone to be held accountable other than just throw up our hands and go, well, you know, too big to fail. And what we got was this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is a place where, you know, they do look at abusive practices. They do look at unfair and deceptive practices. And they do protect consumers. They provide financial education, provide, you know, resources and tools for us, we, to understand the little box on your credit card bill, tell you how long it's going to pay something off. Great idea. Because of them. There's a resolution process where if you think you got screwed, you can go through it. But more importantly, they analyze and collect data. Lots of it. They do lots of research and they watch what's going on. Understand, when these big financial firms think that there's someone who's gathering information on how they're doing business and trying to proactively ensure that they don't, maybe they don't do the crooked stuff. But if Musk and his little Doge boys and Voight and his crew completely destroy this, it's the Wild West again. There's no cop on the beat. And you know yourself, you're on the highway and you know there's no cop on the road. How fast you going? You stopping completely at that stop sign? This is one of those moments where you got to ask yourself, what do you think corporate America is going to do? What do you think the vulture capitalists on Wall Street are going to do? And I think we know. They're going to rob us blind. They're going to create another bubble. They're going to create another scenario where something goes pop, and they're going to come back to us and go, well, you know, if we don't get bailed out, we're going to collapse the economy, and there'll be a depression. Jobs will be lost, and savings will be lost. Because understand, get this, they're fiddling with the FDIC. So if you got money in a bank, and they're fiddling with the federal deposit insurance, and it's not there, what are you setting up for? Understand, all this chaos, all this stuff that Trump and Musk and company are doing are about destabilizing this country, especially for us. For them, it's short-term gain. It's, hey, rob and pillage. It's plunder time. And unfortunately, we're going to be the ones holding the bag. We're going to be the ones who are going to get stuck when the bill comes. Because I guarantee you, it's coming. And they know it's coming. And they know what we do because we've done it before. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Does this concern you? Or is this, no, we're going to just destroy government, let it all go up in flames? rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM. W255 DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
I'm Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
RFK Jr. is sworn in as Health and Human Services Secretary. He did not receive the support of Republican Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Kennedy has been accused of not being good for Medicaid or Medicare, and his stance on vaccinations has been questioned. CBS's Aaron Navarro.
Hear what RFK could do with what Doge is already doing as well. They pretty much got the letter, the green light, per se, from an executive order President Trump signed earlier this week, saying that federal agencies should work with them for, quote, large-scale reductions in force. We know that Doge employees have had their hands in some sort of way in these agencies. So certainly a space to watch